All right. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hours Editorial Review. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hours Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Editorial Review and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events in the light of Bible prophecy, biblical law, and scriptural history. Stay tuned for tonight's special reports right after this message. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you really want government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself, and everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you when your person houses papers and effects, but it does not protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, the answer is yes, we can. All of this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. And it's knowing how much information is gathered and what information is stored, what information you want to keep personal and private, that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues and how to remain private or to get private, why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package? That's step one. It's a four-hour program. It's entertaining, informative, it's educational, and best of all, it's free of charge. And all you have to do is call the school at 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for my free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, the first story tonight. Islamic terror commandos are being infiltrated into the United States in preparation for an American jihad from within, according to intelligence sources. Dozens of radicals trained in camps in western Pakistan and Kashmir are already believed to have slipped into the country, and they've been absorbed into sleeper cells in unsuspecting Muslim communities as the vanguard of a holy army estimated to be several hundred strong. An FBI spokesman said that Al-Qaeda and allied organizations were thought to be operating in 40 American states awaiting orders for terror attacks. An official said up to 400 known radicals had passed through the camps. Many of the camps are run by Harak al-Ansar and Lashkar-e-Taiba, military groups with links to Al-Qaeda and a history of grooming guerrillas to attack security forces. India and Pakistan last month announced a peace initiative on disputed Kashmir. General Pervez Musharraf, Pakistan's president, said that his country would not allow terrorist training on Pakistani soil. However, Indian and U.S. intelligence agencies claim to have surveillance photographs and intercepted signals which show that between 60 and 70 camps are still in use in Pakistan, some which were closed after the September 11th attacks on the United States have also been reactivated. Now, Pakistani authorities have arrested hundreds of Al-Qaeda suspects, including Abu Zubaydah, its top recruiting officer, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, chief of operations, and Ramzi Banalshid, paymaster of the September 11th hijackers. U.S. officials suspect that Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, which created and fostered the Taliban movement in Afghanistan, has not broken all of its Islamic links with terrorist organizations. I got to pause here for a moment. Do you think that Pakistan is a trustworthy ally? They've got nuclear weapons, you know. It was Pakistan that fostered and supported the Taliban across the border there in Afghanistan. Then, when we wanted to go to war against Afghanistan, we bribed the Pakistanis by paying them $20 billion. $20 billion. And said, hey, would you like to join this with us? Do you really think that the Pakistanis are on our side? Or do you think they're like a Trojan horse? As long as we buy lovers and pay for them, they're all for us. I'm not sure that buying allies is the best way to go in foreign policy. I don't want to get in the way, of course, with the happiness and success of American foreign policy, but I'm suspicious. Going on, they said FBI agents last year arrested 11 men, including 9 U.S. citizens, for involvement in what became known as the Virginia Jihad. All were accused of engaging in terrorist training at camps run by Lashkar-e-Taiba. 6 have since pleaded guilty. Asharaf, Pakistani's ambassador to the U.S., yesterday denied the existence of any terrorist camps in his country or in Pakistan-controlled Kashmir. Hey, listen, now either, get this now, the Pakistani ambassador is lying, or our FBI is lying, or our CIA is lying. I mean, after all, our intelligence agencies say, we've got satellites and we're taking pictures of them. Well, in Ukraine yesterday, the foreign ministry denied reports that scientists had sold nuclear weapons to Al-Qaeda. Gee, that's a pregnant possibility, isn't it? A spokesman said for the Ukraine that they had transmitted all of its nuclear weapons to Russia by June 1st of 1996. All right, now we've got 7 million of these Muslims in the United States, and I'm sure that 6,900,000 of them are probably good guys. The thing that's distressing is that you got 100,000 of them that are probably terrorists. And when you put an army like that, you know, that size here in the United States, I mean, you know, what are you talking about? Let's take 100,000 and let's divide that by 7 million. What's that give us? Well, it gives us 1.4%, or about 1.5%. So if only 1.5% of the people in this country that are Muslims, these Arabs and various Muslims, turn out to be terrorists, you know, that would be a pretty formidable army to have behind our lines, don't you think? Do you see the kind of damage that they're doing over there in Iraq? In the Bible, God said, I'll make your enemies to be at peace with you. You practice my law, do things my way, and I'll make your enemies to be at peace with you. I'll be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. I don't see that God is being an enemy to our enemies or an adversary to our adversaries, do you? And then what's even worse is that now we've got up to or potential 1.5% of these enemies behind our lines here in the United States. Now, what do you think that's going to do if these guys start running around with explosives in their cars and running into buildings and banks and setting off roadside bombs, you know, along Highway 80? You know, or Highway 10 down in Florida around Jacksonville. I mean, you know, these guys can get to be kind of nasty. Have you noticed them? And what do you think is going to happen if they start that around September or October, just before the election? Do you think that maybe that might influence the election here in the United States, like it did in Spain? I thought I'd share that one with you. And then there's the offshoring of jobs over here. You've heard about that. Democrats from Capitol Hill to the president. And the campaign trail led into President Bush's chief economist yesterday for his laudatory statements on the movement of U.S. jobs abroad, seizing on the comments to paint Bush as out of touch with struggling workers. You know, I just can't picture exporting one job from the United States to India and then saying that that's good for U.S. interests. That's a little beyond me. Of course, I'm not a politician, and I'm not as smart as President Bush. I mean, after all, you know, he's got a degree. He went to college. He's a pretty smart boy. Dummies like me, seeing jobs being exported to India, stand on the sidelines and say, that just doesn't make sense to us. Now, they've delivered a double blow to America's workers. 3 million jobs destroyed on their watch, and now they want to export more of our jobs overseas, said John F. Kerry, the Massachusetts senator and front runner for the Democratic presidential nomination. What in the world are they thinking? This guy Kerry here is a hypocrite of the first magnitude. Kerry and the Democrats started the exporting of jobs overseas under the Kennedy program, or the Clinton program, as soon as Clinton took office back in 1993. He's a member of Skull and Bones, and so is George Bush. They're both two peas in a pod. So when you elect John Kerry in place of George Bush, you're going to have more jobs exported overseas. Not only won't Kerry stop it, but in addition to that, you're going to have the Patriot Act and Homeland Security, which, of course, the Democrats will blame that on the Republicans, but they're not going to repeal it. So the evils that are put in place by the Republicans will be used against us by the Democrats. And then when we get tired of the Democratic oppression in 2008, then we can elect a Republican and back and forth. You can have a Republican or a Demopublican, but you can't have freedom, independence, and righteousness and justice. So you can choose the red death pill or the green death pill. And Representative Donald Manzillo, Republican of Illinois, called for the resignation of Minicue, the chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors and a prominent Harvard University economist. Manzillo said industrial state Republicans are furious. I know the president can't believe what this man has said, Manzillo said. He ought to walk away and return to his ivy-covered office at Harvard. As Mankiw released the annual economic report of the president, he said Monday that the offshoring of U.S. service jobs is only the latest manifestation of the gains from trade that economists have talked about for centuries. Outsourcing is just a new way of doing international trade, Minicue told reporters. More things are tradable than were tradable in the past, and that's a good thing. I don't doubt that it's a good thing. I think it's good for India. It's good for Pakistan. It's probably good for Brazil. But what in the hell makes it good for a worker in Michigan, New Jersey, or California? I mean, come on, boys and girls. I say it's time for us to grow up and get real. All right, now we've got Hines. You know the wife of Senator Kerry? Well, she's an heiress to the Hines, H.J. Hines food fortune. With Matt Drudge's recent revelation that John Kerry is as faithful to his second wife as he was to his first Vietnamese brother, Senator's presidential campaign may depend more than ever on the actions of his wife, Teresa Hines Kerry. All right, hang on. We've got to take a break here. We'll be right back. Let's take a look at this. Right after this. Back, you're listening to the Law Hours Editorial Review. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network as an educational service in the public interest. And all of these Editorial Review programs are archived for your listening convenience on the Internet at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Well, Joe Smith started the day early, having set his alarm clock made in Japan for 6 a.m., while his coffee pot made in Japan is perking. He puts his blow dryer made in Taiwan to work and shaves with his electric razor made in Hong Kong. He puts on a dress shirt made in Taiwan, his designer jeans made in Singapore, and a pair of tennis shoes made in Korea. Then after cooking up some breakfast in his new electric skillet made in the Philippines, he sits down to figure out on his calculator made in Mexico how much he can spend today. Then after setting his watch made in Switzerland to the radio made in Hong Kong, he goes out and gets in his car made in Germany, goes looking, as he has for many months, for a good-paying American job. Then at the end of another discouraging and fruitless day, Joe decides to relax for a while. So he puts on a pair of sandals made in Brazil, pours himself a glass of wine made in France, turns on his TV made in Japan, and then ponders again why he can't find a good-paying American job. Well, I say that instead of a good-paying American job, why doesn't Joe look for a good-paying American private business dealing in property instead of income? Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of the private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now to order yours. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to my website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and then send me an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, Teresa Hines. I think she's worth about $500 million. And John Kerry came from pretty Ivy League, multimillionaire parents, too, so he married well. Teresa Hines Kerry has financed the secretive Tides Foundation to the tune of more than $4 million over the years. The Tides Foundation, a charity established in 1976 by anti-war activists and leftists Drummond Pike, distributes millions of dollars in grants every year to political organizations advocating far-left causes. The Tides Foundation and its closely allied Tides Center, which is spun off from the foundation in 1996, but run by Drummond Pike, distributed nearly $66 million in grants in 2002 alone. In all, Tides has distributed more than $300 million for the left. These funds went to rabid anti-war demonstrators, anti-trade demonstrators, domestic Islamist organizations, pro-terrorist legal groups, environmentalists, abortion partisans, extremist homosexual activities, and open border advocates. While we're on the subject of open border advocates over here, I saw the other day that the Democrats are proposing to put an amnesty bill through the Congress and give these 12 million illegal Mexicans amnesty, which is what we did, remember, back in the Clinton years. We gave 5 million of them. Well, once you let 5 million of them in, give them amnesty, then the next round's 12. I say, open the borders and let in 24 million, because look, if 12 million is good, 24 million has got to be twice as gooder, don't you think? Now, the population out in California is 31 million, and more than 50% are minorities. Less than half the people in California are white. What do you think is going to happen when the United States of America turns 50% minority? Do you think that's going to make a change in the political, the economic, and the social makeup of the demographics of the nation? Well, during the years 1995 to 2001, the Howard Hines Endowment, which Hines Kerry chairs, gave Tides more than $4.3 million, and the combined Hines Endowments, composed of the Howard Hines Endowment and the Vera I. Hines Endowment, donated $1.6 million to establish the Tides Center for Western Pennsylvania. The Tides Foundation is a major source of revenue for some of the most extreme groups on the left. Tides allows donors to anonymously contribute money to a host of causes. The donor simply makes a check out to Tides and instructs the foundation where to forward the money. You know, that's called money laundering, isn't it? You know, you send money off and then you don't want anybody to know where you're giving the money. I mean, you don't want to have a list like this made. So John Kerry is married to this rabid leftist. You know, this is a woman about the same ilk as Jane Fonda. Remember Hanoi Jane? We did an article on her last week. Now, the anti-war movement. Senator John F. Kerry has gone far with his nuanced view of Operation Iraqi Freedom. He voted for the war resolution, but then specified a litany of conditions that the Bush administration must meet before he would support combat. Then he proceeded to vote against funding troops already in harm's way, then claimed that he had always supported the president when Saddam Hussein was captured. The grant recipients of the Tides Foundation, to which Kerry's wife has steered more than $4 billion in charitable funds, understand no such nuance. Tides established the Iraq Peace Fund and the Peace Strategies Fund to fund the anti-war movement. Now, the United States will lose the war in Iraq the same way that we did over in Vietnam. And the reason for that is the side wins. Who can persuade the other side that they can't win and that they're going to lose? Psychological war. Militarily. I mean, if you get right down to where push comes to shove, did you watch that little escapade over in Fallujah the other day where the United States backed down? There's little doubt in my mind that U.S. troops could have gone in there, leveled every building in town, killed every man, woman, and child, every terrorist, and turned that thing into a rock pile. They didn't do it, of course. But now we've suffered a defeat in Fallujah. That's just the first of many defeats that you're going to watch, that you're going to have the sickening experience. Doesn't it just kind of turn your stomach when America gets defeated? And it's not an accident. It's not an accident. The war went beautifully. Rumsfeld and Bush and company did a magnificent job of defeating the Iraqis. And now you're over here in this political war, see? And you're in this guerrilla insurgency. And Americans will lose their will to fight. Taking a look at the number of casualties that's coming in, it's minuscule. Minuscule. When the United States went to war in World War II, we lost 400,000 dead. 400,000 dead. Over here in Iraq, I think the number right now stands at about 800. A drop in the bucket. If you're going to go to war, you're going to have casualties. There's going to be bodies coming home, and there's going to be flags and funerals. But you see, Americans no longer have the stomach for conquest and war. I don't know why Americans ever got excited about going to war in Afghanistan and Iraq to start with, because Americans no longer have the stomach for war. See, in World War II, we went after it for about 3 or 4 years. And we stuck with it until we won the game. But in Vietnam, we stuck with it for about 8 years. And the North Vietnamese, you know, they knew. If we can stay in this game, the Americans will give up and quit. That's what they did in Somalia. We'll stay in the game, the Americans will give up and quit. And here in Iraq, if we can stay in the game, the Americans will give up and quit. So the fanatics will stick with it. And the anti-war establishment over here, headed by Hines and others like her, Hanoi Jane and Hanoi, in this case, I guess it's Baghdad Teresa, will keep after this, and they'll keep propagandizing us, and they control the press, and they'll keep influencing us and telling us, you know, we can't win. In fact, I was watching McNeil Lehrer tonight, and they had a guy from Pennsylvania. He's the chairman of the House, I don't know, Armed Services Committee or something. I forgot his name now. He said, we've already lost in Iraq. Here it comes. Can you see what's coming? He says, we've already lost. It's bad Bush policy and blah, blah, blah. Now, sir, Americans just don't have what our forefathers had. When our forefathers went down to Texas, by God, they stole it fair and square from the Mexicans. No ifs, ands, or buts. When Bush and company went over to Iraq, they stole Iraq fair and square. No ifs, ands, or buts. The difference is that our Anglo-Saxon forefathers down in Texas, they had what it took to stick with it and hang on to it. And now we don't have what it takes to stick with it and hang on to it. Manifest destiny is a thing of the past. And then, of course, our God isn't working for us any longer either. I got to tell you a little story here. A little story here about war. It's over in Leviticus chapter 26. If you got a Bible, why don't you flip over here to Leviticus 26, or just jot this down. You got a pencil right there. Read them and weep. In Leviticus 26, a little story comes up over here where he says, "You shall make you no idols nor graven images, and neither shall you rear up a standing image, and neither shall you set up any image of stone in your land to bow down to. I'm the Eternal, your God." In verse 8, he says, "Five of you shall chase 100, 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword. For I will have respect unto you, and I'll make you fruitful, and multiply you, and establish my covenant with you." See, that's what he told us he'd do for us. Well, back in the War of 1812, Andrew Jackson came storming into New Orleans, and with a force of 989 men, he put 10,000 British troops to flight. 10-1 odds, and he defeated them. Now, that's the difference between having God working on our side and having Carrie and Teresa Hines working for us. Now, over here in verse 20, it says, "Your strength shall be spent in vain. Your land shall not yield or increase, and neither shall the trees of your land yield their fruit. If you walk contrary to me, and if you won't hearken unto me, I'll bring seven times more plagues upon you. I'll send wild beasts." In verse 25, he says, "I'm going to bring a sword." That's war. "I'm going to bring a war on you that will avenge the quarrel of my covenant. And when you're gathered together within your cities, I'll send the pestilence among you, and you'll be delivered into the hands of your enemies." I suspect that that's coming to pass over here in Iraq. We're going to be delivered into the hands of our enemies. If you think John Kerry and Teresa Hines are your friends, why don't you vote for them next November? Skull and Bones and Baghdad Teresa. Gold from Lead. And Perpetual Motion. Then there's a border rally. Take a look at this border story over here. "Our government refuses to control our border. We're being invaded by 2,000 Mexicans a day." You got your mind on Iraq. The invasion's going on across the Rio Grande River. "Our government refuses to control that border, and the people must demand action. 100,000 signed petitions to be delivered. American Border Patrol, nonprofit public interest corporation, has collected more than 100,000 petitions to the government to put troops on the border to protect America against terrorists and illegal aliens. All Americans are called on to attend. ABP is holding a rally in Tucson, Arizona to deliver these petitions to the government. Americans concerned about the future of their nation are urged to attend. We'll get the petition and sign it and mail it or bring it to the rally." All right, well, that came and went. Nobody in America is paying any attention. See, you've already got 30 million Mexicans in the country. And, of course, those people have an axe to grind. They're going to petition the government to let in another 30 million. I'll give them 60. They're already the biggest minority in the country. You've got 13% of the population. Now, add to that 12% of the blacks, that's 25. The total population in the United States now is 32% minority and 68% is white. In 1960, the numbers were 90% white and 10% all others. Now, there's 100 million Mexicans in Mexico, and they all want to come to the United States, wouldn't you? I mean, if you were flat broke and you were as poor as those people are down there, of course you'd want to come to the United States. I've got a farm here, and of course there are a lot of poor people that would like to come here and take over my farm. And if I didn't defend my fences, I'm sure that they would come and squat and take over. It's up to me to defend it. America is no longer defending its borders, and the invasion is already here. And now you've already got one-third of your population now is minority. That one-third is going to vote for more minorities. And then you've got 17% of the whites over here that's going to vote with them. They've already got the majority. The stranger that's within your gates is going to rise up high above you and bring you down very low. Now, that's what our God told us. Pay attention now. So America's already a lost cause. There are going to be some survivors. What you better be thinking about is How do I survive this? The ball game's already over. All we're talking about now is the mopping up operation. Listen to this gold from lead story. Will gold ever go over $600 an ounce now, or will the price of gold drop as the technology improves? Is this the answer to the old argument, there will never be enough gold to make it a viable circulating currency? Well, this is a fascinating story. I must say, I think I found a great way to make money, literally. Who needs to work now? Have you heard of alchemy? Well, in simple terms, it means changing one metal. Ancient magicians, they used to be called scientists, are supposed to have done it. Listen to this. The Russians say they've got the secret of alchemy connected. Back for the closer, you're listening to the Editorial Review. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest. Your support of Truth Radio and of our advertisers and sponsors is very important to us, so for more information about Truth Radio Network programming, please go to our website. That's truthradio.com, truthradio.com. And Truth Radio Network is a private volunteer organization established as a private charitable trust for the purpose of exercising and defending free speech. Truth Radio is not a 501c3 tax-exempt institution. Donations are not tax-deductible. If they were, we wouldn't be free to tell the truth. Your financial support, however, helps us pay for our satellite time, internet audio streaming, and overhead costs. So we thank you very much for that continued financial support. It comes through your donations that you make to Truth Radio, P.O. Box 344, Napomo, California, 93444. Again, that's Truth Radio, P.O. Box 344, Napomo, N-I-P-O-M-O, California, 93444. Here's tonight's wise old saying, the righteous are bold as lions, but the wicked flee when none pursue. All right, the Russians claim that they've got a perpetual motion machine that they can use alchemy to turn lead into gold. Listen to this. Have you heard of alchemy? It's, in simple terms, it means changing one metal into another. Well, Russian scientists have reportedly found a cheap way to convert lead into gold. The astonishing story has been told by a Russian physicist who immigrated to Israel. He said scientists were conducting an experiment in nuclear bombardment when they found the lead shielding inside an advanced nuclear reactor had changed into gold. The Russians were able to repeat the process under laboratory conditions. They've considered building facilities to make bullion in large quantities. One problem: to make gold will cost $600 an ounce. The world gold price needs to go up again before this will become profitable. In Dead Men's Secrets, I give you some of my findings on ancient alchemy secrets. Fascinating, don't you think? I'll believe it when I see it. There's just no end to cons and con men, is there? The Russians are born liars. They've been doing that for the last 75 years. And then we got business v. commerce over here. Buying and selling does not equal transportation. It equals trade. And I think one can clear up the jurisdictional dilemma by remembering that business that crosses a boundary becomes commerce, subject to the respective authority. For example, if you had a vegetable stand on your own property, a business license would not be necessary. However, if you took that harvest to another property, you'd need permission of that owner to sell. And when that harvest crossed from the private sector into the public sector for sale again, he may need permission of the respective authority. Well, I witnessed an example at a gun show the other day. I was invited to show my books on a vendor's table. One day, the state sales tax agent showed up and handed out forms for the collection of sales tax. I was surprised. This never happened before. Well, my host told me not to worry. Then I realized that this specific show was held at the state farmers market, which is state property, and it was entirely legitimate to require a kickback or a tax for using public property for private profit. Thanks to national socialism, no one is presumed to have any private property anymore or any private rights. And without private property, everything is presumed to need permission, such as a dog license or a hunting license, a fishing license, a marriage license, a trading license, and so on. Takes us back to Hale versus Henkel. The individual owes nothing to the state since he receives nothing therefrom. But a corporation is presumed to be incorporated for the benefit of the public. When you act in a corporate capacity, you can expect to be treated like a corporation. Here's more on Isherby. Remember this lady, Charlotte Isherby, the lady that wrote the book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America? Well, my 1985 booklet, Back to Basics Reform, or OBE, Skinnerian International Curriculum, Necessary for United States Participation in a Socialist One-World Government, scheduled for the early years of the 21st century, 47 pages, is now available free on my website to read, email, or to print out for distribution. So instructions follow. If you will go to www.deliberatedumbingdown.com, homepage, and then click on Undulating Words, free gift from author, and my booklet will pop up in two versions, one for reading and emailing, and one for emailing, printing out, and distributing. This booklet is important since it contains documentation regarding the international restructuring of education agenda, and especially the animal training method known as Mastery Learning Direct Instruction. The book was boycotted by a conservative establishment organization upon publication, but sold well at the grassroots level, 50,000 copies so far. The book is now out of print and in demand. That's why I decided to put it on the Internet free. One can use it today with elected officials to prove how they have been paid and been had by Republicans as well as Democrats. And what I predicted would happen, considering the documents to which I had access, has happened. Now, I served as a senior policy advisor in the Reagan Department of Education from 1981 to 1983, and I was fired due to leaking an important document. However, since I knew I'd get fired before leaking the document, I got all of the confidential documents out and into my apartment before leaking the document to the press. The book is especially valuable right now when there is so much opposition to the Bush administration's No Child Left Behind Act. It's being circulated in foreign countries which have the same dumbing down agenda. Remember, that book is on the web at www.deliberatedumbingdown.com, homepage, and click on the Undulating Words. Charlotte Isherby, I did a report on it. If you'd like to get the report that I did, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on to the archives, and look for The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. Well, George W. Bush betrayed us, howled Al Gore. He played on our fear. He took America on an ill-conceived foreign adventure, dangerous to our troops, an adventure that was preordained and planned before 9/11 ever happened. Hearing it, Gore's rant seemed slanderous and demagogic, for though U.S. policy since Clinton had called for regime change in Iraq, there's no evidence none that Bush planned to invade prior to 9/11. Yeah, the president has a grave problem, and here's what it is. Burrowed inside his foreign policy team are men guilty of exactly what Gore accuses Bush of, men who did exploit our fears to stampede us into a war that they had plotted for years. Consider this. In 1996, in a strategy paper crafted for Israel's Bibi Netanyahu, Richard Perl, Douglas Feith, and David Wormser urged him to focus on removing Saddam Hussein from power as an Israeli strategic objective. Perl, Feith, Wormser were all on Bush's foreign policy team on 9/11. In 1998, eight members of Bush's future team, including Perl, Wolfowitz, and Rumsfeld, wrote Clinton urging him or upon him a strategy that should aim above all at the removal of Saddam Hussein. On January 1, 2001, 9 months before 9/11, Wormser called for U.S.-Israeli attacks to broaden the Middle East, to broaden the conflict, to strike fatally the regimes of Damascus, Baghdad, Tripoli, Tehran, and Gaza, to establish the recognition that fighting with either the United States or Israel is suicidal. Crisis can be opportunities, added Wormser. On September 11th, opportunity struck. On September the 15th, according to author Bob Woodward, Paul Wolfowitz spoke up in the War Cabinet to urge that Afghanistan be put on a back burner and an attack be mounted at once on Iraq, though Iraq had had nothing to do with 9/11. So why Iraq? Said Wolfowitz, because it's doable. And I'll bet you it was because they've got 25% of the world's known oil reserves. What's in Afghanistan? Well, on September the 20th, 40 neoconservatives in an open letter demanded that Bush remove Saddam from power, even if evidence does not link Iraq directly to the 9/11 attack. Failure to do so, they warned the president, would constitute an early and perhaps decisive surrender in the war on international terrorism. So while Bush had taken office as a traditional conservative, skeptical of nation-building and calling for a more humble foreign policy, after 9/11, he was captured by the neocons and converted to an agenda that they had worked up years before. Suddenly, he sounded just like them, threatening wars on axis of evil nations that had nothing to do with 9/11. And if you believe this fairy tale, boys and girls, I've got a bridge to sell. George Bush, remember, is a member of Skull and Bones, boys and girls. He's one of the International Global 2000 people. Now, though he had internationalized the neoconservative agenda for war, he had no rationale, no justification, no cause. Iraq had not threatened an attack on us. So let's enter then the weapons of mass destruction. The neoconservatives pressed on Bush the idea that Iraq must still have weapons of mass destruction and must be working on nuclear weapons, and as Saddam was a figure of such irrationality, for example, a madman, he would readily give an atom bomb to Al-Qaeda. An American city would be incinerated. Where did the weapons of mass destruction come from? Well, they came from the United States of America. We're the ones sold them to him. Come on, boys and girls, let's wake up. Wake up. Until then, God bless you.